This is VOA News. I'm Jim Bertel. House Democrats worked through the weekend speeding towards articles of impeachment against President Donald Trump. AP's Ben Thomas reports.
Democrats say the charges are likely to focus on abuse of power and obstruction of the congressional inquiry. The case is centered around President Trump's July 25th phone call in which he asked Ukraine's president for a favor in investigating Democrats as he withheld nearly $400 million in military aid. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Police in Hong Kong say protesters on Sunday set fires outside court buildings, threw gas bombs, and spray-painted graffiti on government buildings, marring what was otherwise a generally peaceful march. Reuters' Emer McCarthy reports.
It was the first time since August that the Civil Human Rights Front, organizer of million-strong marches earlier in the year that paralyzed the Asian Finance Center, had received authorities' permission for a rally. It estimated turnout of 800,000, but police argued it was much lower, at a mere 183,000. China blames the ongoing unrest, now in its sixth month, on interference by foreign governments, including the United States and Britain.
That's Reuters' Emer McCarthy reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump is warning North Korean leader Kim Jong-un against hostile military actions, even as Pyongyang announced it had conducted a very important test at a satellite launching site. North Korea state media says the test was conducted at a long-range rocket launching site near the border of China. Iranian President Hassan Rouhani presented what he called a budget to resist sanctions to Parliament on Sunday and suggested a possible multi-billion-dollar loan from Russia would be a key source of revenues. From Washington, you're listening to VOA News. Authorities say an electrical short circuit appears to have caused a fire that killed at least 43 people in a factory in central New Delhi early Sunday, as relatives of the victims gathered outside a mortuary to identify the dead. Authorities say firefighters had to fight the blaze from 100 meters away because it broke out in one of the area's many alleyways, tangled in electrical wire and too narrow for vehicles to access. Outside the mortuary, which was guarded by dozens of police officers, some of the workers' relatives said they had received phone calls from the men trapped inside who begged them to call the fire brigade. According to documents reviewed by the Kyoto News Service, Japan's army during World War II asked the government to provide one sex slave for every 70 soldiers. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has more on the historical documents that highlighted the state role in the so-called comfort women system.
The 23 documents were gathered by Japan's cabinet secretariat between April 2017 and March 2019. According to Kyoto, they included 13 classified dispatches from the Japanese consulates in China to the foreign ministry in Tokyo, dating back to 1938. The sex slaves issue has been a source of a painful dispute between South Korea and Japan. The women were from Korea, Taiwan, and Australia, the Philippines, as well as Japan. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
FBI officials say they're trying to determine a motive for Friday's shooting at a Florida naval base that left the gunman and three others dead. AP's Mike Hempen reports.
Special Agent in Charge Rachel Rojas says investigators are working under the presumption the shooting was an act of terrorism.
This allows us to take advantage of investigative techniques that can help us more quickly identify and then eliminate any additional potential threats to the rest of our community.
Rojas says it's not known whether the gunman, who was from Saudi Arabia, acted alone. A U.S. official not authorized to speak publicly tells the AP investigators believe the gunman made social media posts in which he talked about U.S. support for Israel and claimed Americans are anti-Muslim. I'm Mike Hempen.
Several people were injured on White Island in New Zealand when a volcano began erupting there on Monday. The National Emergency Management Agency says the eruption made the area immediately around the island hazardous, and up to 20 people were on White Island when the eruption occurred. The White Island volcano is one of New Zealand's most active volcanoes. For more on any of today's top stories, please visit us at voanews.com or download the VOA mobile app for news on the go. I'm Jim Bertel, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Monday, December 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Gambian president pays tribute to 60 Gambians who died off the coast of Mauritania.
To lose 60 young lives at sea is a national tragedy and a matter of grave concern to my government. A full police investigation has been launched to get to the bottom of this serious national disaster.
Sudan's prime minister is reducing the number of Sudanese troops in Yemen. An all-Liberian diaspora conference vows to lobby for passage of a proposition for dual citizenship. UNICEF appeals for $180 million to support South Sudanese women and children. And three provinces endorse Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa ahead of the 2023 presidential election.
He has proved to us that he is a listening president. He's a president who understands, listens to the challenges, the issues that are raised by the people.
Ober Umpofu is the Secretary for Administration of Zimbabwe's ruling ZANU-PF. Those stories, plus Samson Omale's sports, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok announced Sunday that his country has reduced its troop strength in Yemen, where it has bolstered a Saudi military coalition supporting the government against rebels. Our troops in Yemen at the beginning were 15,000, and now they came down to 5,000, Hamdok said on arrival in Khartoum after a six-day visit to the United States. His announcement was the first time an official had provided figures on the number of Sudanese soldiers involved in Yemen's civil war. He added that Sudan believes that the situation in Yemen is a political solution. Hamdok assumed his role in a transition government in September following the April ouster of President Omar al-Bashir. The United Nations Children's Agency, UNICEF, has appealed for $180 million to provide humanitarian assistance to South Sudanese women and children next year. The UNICEF country representative for South Sudan says the money will be used to prevent malnutrition, vaccinate children against killer diseases, and provide education, among other things. Deng Magod has more from Juba.
Mohamed Ayoya, UNICEF's country representative for South Sudan, says his agency urgently needs money to respond to the most immediate needs of South Sudanese women and more than 4 million children.
This may look like a lot of money, $180 million, but clearly if you look at how much this costs per child, it doesn't represent much. In fact, this $180 million is going to be like $50 per child, which is going to save many lives if we are able to mobilize it all for the children in South Sudan.
Ayoya says by spending only $50 on each child, UNICEF will be able to give life-saving humanitarian assistance to more than 3 million children across South Sudan. That's about 80% of the children who need help in the country. Ayoya says he expects the number of children suffering from acute malnutrition to increase due to malaria, measles, diarrhea, and poor nutrition.
1.3 million children under five will suffer from acute malnutrition next year. And that's really big, 1.3 million children. And this is not actually taking into account the fact that we are probably going to see increased level of food insecurity, but you are also going to see a negative impact of the floods that we have all been facing, in particularly the eastern part of the country. Those floods are increasing the rates of malaria.
Madzoyen, the head of field operations at UNICEF, says the $180 million will enable children's agency to save the lives of hundreds of thousands of acutely malnourished children.
268,000 children treated for severe acute malnutrition. This is what we aim for in 2020. And almost 3 million children provided with vitamin A. Vitamin A is a very simple, cheap, and very effective way to boost children's health and protect their health. Over 500,000 children will be vaccinated against measles, and providing 340,000 net insecticide-treated nets against malaria. On WASH, providing over 800,000 people accessing safe water, and 300,000 people receiving sanitation services.
Oyen says that includes support to POC sites. Ayoya says the child mortality rate in South Sudan is alarming. 1 out of 10 children in South Sudan die before the age of 5.
I am 100% sure that children growing in South Sudan have no role in the situation in the country. Yet they are paying the highest price and also the future of this country. So the highest attention should be given to them. If you want to see a prosperous South Sudan, we need to continue to invest in the child generation, ensuring that they are not only surviving but actually thriving.
Ayoya is calling on aid agencies, donors, and the government to work together to improve the lives of South Sudanese children. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
At least three provinces have endorsed Zimbabwean President Emmerson Mnangagwa as the ruling ZANU-PF's sole candidate for the 2023 presidential election amid severe food shortages and debilitating hyperinflation that has forced some people to live from hand to mouth. The provinces are Bulawayo, Matabeleland North, and Matabeleland South. ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration, Obert Mpofu, says more provinces are expected to endorse President Mnangagwa ahead of the party's annual People's Conference set for next week.
Most provinces have endorsed his candidature in 2023. Even the few that are remaining are definitely going to endorse him because he has proved to us that he is a listening president. He's a president who understands, listens to the challenges, the issues that are raised by the people. We also want to give him some time to settle down in leadership. You know that a lot of impediments in our administration of the country. No, these are from the opposition. No, there's been some court challenges. There's been some disputes over the legitimacy. There've been all sorts of things. But we want to give him more time to run this country, as he has proven to us. As the party as well as the leader of the governing party, that he wants things to be done for the betterment of the people.
Why is it important for you to endorse him at this moment?
No, we are talking about resolutions which need implementation, and we have to know who is going to implement them. And we have to tell the country who is going to implement them. You can't decide, you can't be futuristic if you don't know who the leader will be there every time those things have to be implemented. So we just want to advise the nation that all the resolutions for implementation will have to be done by the president who listens to the people. I mean, the president we have now is a listening president. He is a down-to-earth president. He is non-regional, non-tribal. There's time for the people's needs. So we want to advise our people that in all what we are doing, in all that we intend doing, or in all that we expect to be done, it will be him that will be superintending over those issues.
But there's some people, Mr. Mpofu, who are saying that the president should actually focus on, you know, the economy that is declining very fast, and the same should be done by ZANU-PF. What's your reaction to that? Instead of, you know, concentrating on some...
The issue of the economy is an issue that we need to address, and it can only be addressed under his leadership, because he is the one that has come up with some policies that seek to address the plight of the people. So we cannot actually anticipate someone whom we don't know, when in fact there is one who has come up with a clear program of addressing the issues. And this is Comrade Idi Mnangagwa.
We see that there are reports indicating that some people have also endorsed some vice presidential aspirants. And the names that are coming up, one of them is Mrs. Opa Muchinguri Kashiri, and then Mr. Chinga Dube, who is a retired army general.
No, that is wishful thinking. In politics, you have all those wishes from people who don't know what is happening. I mean, the politics doesn't work that way. You cannot just come up with names and think they will be implemented. No. We, as ZANU-PF, have one leader as the president, that is President Idi Mnangagwa.
Obert Mpofu is the ZANU-PF Secretary for Administration. He spoke with Gabe Dube of View Zimbabwe Service. Today is Monday, December 9th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time, 15 minutes past the hour. Gambian President Adama Barrow has reaffirmed his government's commitment to arrest and prosecute human traffickers. He made the promise over the weekend in a nationwide address. This followed the death of 60 Gambian youth who were among those killed in a boat accident in Mauritanian waters near Nuacha. A Pandero Mbaya report from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Addressing a saddened nation on Saturday, President Barrow says no stone would be left unturned in the investigations of the Gambian Mauritanian boat accident.
Fellow Gambians, to lose 60 young lives at sea is a national tragedy and a matter of grave concern to my government. A full police investigation has been launched to get to the bottom of this serious national disaster. The culprits will be prosecuted according to law.
The boat, which was carrying 150 people, left Barra in the North Bank region of the Gambia for Spain. It capsizes in Mauritania, leaving 60 people dead and many others critically sick.
My government has already dispatched funds to Mauritania to cater for the immediate needs of the survivors admitted to hospital and to plan for their repatriation to the Gambia. Also, I have been informed that 189 people have been intercepted by the Mauritanian authorities. Arrangements have been made to transport them back to Banjul.
The president has expressed his heartfelt condolences to the bereaved families. He describes the incident as what he calls the most painful life experience.
The advocacy efforts around irregular migration and the dangers inherent in it will be accelerated so that our youth can use legal, acceptable means to travel outside the Gambia.
The U.S. State Department, in its 2019 human trafficking report, says the Gambian government hasn't met the minimum standards for the elimination of human trafficking. It also says the government's efforts to combat the global pandemic was below expectations. President Barrow again.
As part of the efforts to tackle human trafficking, government has taken renewed measures to strengthen the National Authority for Trafficking in Person under the Ministry of Justice to effectively execute its mandate. Government will provide additional support to the Attorney General Chambers to fast-track prosecution of cases involving human trafficking. Law enforcement officials are also instructed to increase surveillance and arrests for diligent prosecution of criminals involved in human trafficking.
Frederick Tendeng is a Gambian political analyst.
The recent report on international crime, organized crime, portrays the Gambia as one of the hubs in international human trafficking, which is not good. And essentially, it is due to this backway phenomenon with this kind of going to Europe.
Tendeng has recently visited Barra to learn firsthand about human trafficking there.
I visited Barra, the family of Mami Bahung. It was sad, but I was very shocked when I went to Medina Serene Mass in a family called Janyan. In one Kabilo, that is the main compound, the ancestor, I understand, is Fal Jany. You have about six houses in the Kabilo. They lost in total 13 youths, 13 adolescents. We were all killed in that canoe. It was very sad.
Opposition leaders in the country had issued statements expressing shock about the boat accident. They call on the government to make an end to human trafficking. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pahanderin by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Diaspora Liberians have endorsed Proposition 1, which will amend Article 28 of Liberia's constitution to make possible dual citizenship. A national constitutional referendum is expected to take place next year. During a two-day All-Liberian Diaspora Conference held over the weekend in the U.S. state of Maryland, Liberians agreed to be present on the ground in Liberia prior to and during the 2020 referendum. John Loy is chair of the All-Liberian Diaspora Conference.
This gathering of us today sends a positive message across the world that we as Liberians mean business. We are gathered here today because we want to send a message to the world that Liberians in the diaspora mean business. I repeat that, recognizing the fact that this gathering, as symbolic as it is, sends a message not only to Liberia, it sends a message to the international community that despite our situation, Liberians abroad, forced out of their home through the situation of war, still remember where we came from. And we feel the pain also of those we left behind.
Michael Mollard, speaking on the economic benefits of dual citizenship, said dual citizenship will create capital for the Liberian government. Presently, he said, diaspora remittances are helping to keep the struggling Liberian economy afloat. But he said, currently, the Liberian government does not appear to meet the three elements essential for investment: political stability, level of corruption, and trust in institutions. Liberia's ambassador to the United States, George Patton, urged Liberians to support the proposition on dual citizenship by engaging Liberians in Liberia, some of whom, he said, are skeptical of the diaspora and dual citizenship. But the ambassador cautioned Liberians in the diaspora against engaging in activities that undermine Liberia's fragile peace and stability.
In the referendum, you need the numbers to achieve dual citizenship. You need to now begin to send your folks around to Liberia to begin to engage our people to prepare for this referendum. May I remind this gathering, as you always say, that Liberia is all we have. And this is true, because for some of you who are legal residents or citizens of other countries, you have not given up on Liberia. That is why this conference is convening. That is why you are here. People back home, during these festive seasons, and I say this specifically to mention the fact that some months ago, some of our own people in the diaspora who were threatening to withhold remittances to their people, that would be a wrong idea. We must reject and decline the temptation to engage in any activity that has the inclination to undermine our fragile peace and stability. Street protests will not ameliorate the economic challenges facing our country. In fact, they are most likely to portray the image of instability and exacerbate the current constraints.
The delegates also discussed the issue of setting up a war crimes court to address alleged injustices during Liberia's 14-year civil war. Councillor Jerome Verdier, former chair of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission, said there can be no true peace in Liberia without justice.
It would appear, or some would want it to appear, as if we have a debate as to whether we should have a war crimes court or not. It is not a debate. But we have resistance by people who are in authority, who want to benefit from corruption and impunity, that believe that the war crimes court should not be established in Liberia. There is no debate. The citizens have been clear about it. They want the war crimes court. They want justice. And justice is not just for ourselves, who think we are not victims, but justice is for victims as well. Victims have voice. Victims have their own issues that need to be addressed. Even the perpetrators, many of them became victims later on, and they have issues that need to be addressed. And the establishment of a mechanism, the court, the war crimes court, will address all of these issues and pave our way to genuine reconciliation and peace. You want to consider for a while, what is peace? What is peace? Generally, we consider that it is a state of calmness, a state of normalcy, a state of tranquility. But in Liberia, we will not have a genuine, lasting peace in Liberia until all of the conflictual issues in Liberia are addressed and reconciliation.
Ambassador Patton urged the delegates to take into consideration the arguments for and against the establishment of a war crimes court in Liberia.
The debate around the establishment of the court has many dimensions. On the one hand, there are individuals and institutions who contend that those who have suffered violations must receive justice. In other words, perpetrators of heinous crimes during the Civil War must be punished. On the other hand, there are those who argue that Liberia needs to heal and have placed restoring bonds and keeping Liberia safe and peaceful above establishing a court. Yet, many believe that the court will serve as deterrent to war bondage. In my view, all of these positions seem credible and valid. You may recall, however, President, we have recently communicated with the national legislature seeking advice in keeping with Article 34E of the Liberian Constitution on setting up of War and Economic Crimes Court. My sense is that there are crucial issues that must be resolved.
Ambassador George Patton, Liberia's ambassador to the United States. Time now for Daybreak Africa's Post. Here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports with match day two results from the CAF Confederations Cup played this past weekend across the continent. Egyptian debutant Pyramid proved too strong for fellow group stage first-timers Noah Diubu of Mauritania, thrashing them 6-0 in the Cairo-based 30 June Stadium on Sunday night to go top of the 2019-2020 total CAF Confederations Cup Group A in grand style. The other Group A game saw Egyptian side Al-Masri scoring twice in each half to record a 4-2 win at home to Nigeria's Enugu Rangers to make it 2 wins from 2 games in Group A. In Group B, last year's runners-up RS Bakane of Morocco drew 1-1 away to Zambian side Zanaco. Jibril Ouattara opened the scoring in the 15th minute, but Charles Zulu equalized 10 minutes later. Elsewhere, DR Congo's Mutema Pembe beat Benin FC Essiane. In Group C, Boubacar Talato netted the only goal as Malian side Joliba, runners-up in 2012, edged South Africa's Bidvest Wits in Bamako, while Guinean side Horoya AC went top of the group after thumping Al-Nassr of Libya 3-0. In Nigeria, at the Enyimba International Stadium in Aba, Martins Usule scored the only goal as Nigerian champions Enyimba claimed its first win of the 2019-2020 CAF Confederations Cup after edging out San Pedro of Cote d'Ivoire 1-0 on Sunday. Staying with football news, East African Regional Football Cup competition CECAFA Senior Challenge is underway in Uganda. Host Ugandan Cranes opened their campaign with a slim 2-1 victory over Burundi. Ugandan Cranes coach is Jonathan McKinstry.
I also know how demanding the tournament can be. To make it all the way to the final involves 6 games in only 13 or 14 days. And so really you need players who are full of energy and full of just that robustness to make it through the tournament.
In other games, Somalia and Djibouti played to a goalless draw. Harambee Stars of Kenya, on the other hand, got their title defense off to a perfect start on Sunday with a 1-0 win over rivals Tanzania's Taifa Stars in Kampala. The victory saw Kenya go top of Group B with 3 points after Sudan and Zanzibar played out to a 1-1 draw in an earlier fixture at the Lugogo Stadium. Francis Kimazi is Harambee Stars coach.
Every team in the tournament wants to give its best, so we are the defending champion. We cannot take that for granted. You know, the other team worked so hard to achieve that, so we want to see if we can also work so hard and achieve something.
In women's football, the South African Football Association has announced they are no longer willing to pursue their bid to host the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup, but will shift their focus to the 2027 edition. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, summary of Africa news. Gambian President Adama Barrow has reaffirmed his government's commitment to arrest and prosecute human traffickers. He made the promise over the weekend in a nationwide address. This followed the death of 60 Gambian youths who were among those killed in a boat accident in Mauritanian waters. That's it for this Monday, December 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Bote in Washington.
Relax, unwind, or charge up? Then listen to Music Time in Africa this weekend. It'll do all that for you and more. I'm Heather Maxwell. I know good music, and Africa is my passion. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for 1 hour of commercial-free Pan-African music of the highest caliber. You get great music, music news, and amazing artist interviews from rising stars to superstars. This listen will take you places. So do it. Join me for Music Time in Africa, your weekend destination.